And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Plus minus.
Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot!
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit.
Plus minus.
That is a word right there.
What'd you say?
Fluffle.
Plus minus.
Yeah, like you, Marcus Thompson.
Marcus always tell the truth. Plus minus.
The only thing that I would say to Ethan Strauss is that he's a pretty damn good reporter. He's well
plus
respected.
Minus. I think he got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Welcome to Warriors Plus Minus. It is very obvious what we are going to talk about today for this episode. One of the great performances of his life, of his entire career. Everybody's abuzz about it. Ethan, I feel like you should have the floor. Tell us about how great Kevon Looney was.
I knew that setup. I knew it was still well done. I mean, I gotta say, look, Steph's brilliant.
He was great. Come on.
We're gonna wax poetic, but Looney and Draymond both, I think, deserve some praise for helping to facilitate it. They put on a screen setting clinic in that game against the Sixers, carved up the necessary space, and then Steph did the rest. And what can we even say about it? Marcus just wrote a great article. The readers are loving it. The fans are loving it. I think the topic that people are discussing now is the comparison, right? How does this compare to the other two MVP seasons? Where do you guys come down on that?
I said last night, and people will be very mad at me, but it's got to be behind the unanimous MVP season because they think now is always better than later. You have to say now. You have to praise everybody now, or else you're mean and old and bitter. But he was putting up actually better numbers back then. Maybe not volume numbers, but the numbers were better and the efficiency was better. And it was for every game mattered. Every game at the top, they're battling. You know, they decide they want to go for the record. They get the record. That was just an epic. It is amazing, though, that he can sustain it and be comparable to this uncomparable season for anybody else at age 33. Five full seasons later, this guy is still in the same context as he was when he put up some season that, you know, you thought maybe nobody could ever touch in that realm. That's the amazing part of it for me.
He's a better player now, but that was a better performance. Like, the stakes were higher.
I said that on the on our like national NBA podcast yesterday, where I would say if you took this version of Steph Curry and put him on that team, I do think this version of Steph Curry is better, even though that's a more magical, memorable season. He's bigger, he's better defensively, and he's mastered all the off-ball stuff and everything. And the shooting percentages are the same. The volume. Like, I guess I would ask why you don't, because he's clearly in better shape and he's a better defender.
I mean, let's be clear. I don't want to start this off by denigrating Steph's season that's so amazing, especially at his age right now, and saying that he's like a bum compared to his unanimous MVP season. But I thought that he just had more athleticism back then. I thought he was more of a presence on defense. I thought he was a better defensive player in that season. And also, this is kind of air hockey basketball that we're watching right now. I mean, this is not all Madden mode that we're watching. It was harder to get a bucket back then. At the same time, it's just magical, man. It's still incredible to watch what he's doing, and it has a resonance. And I mean, I don't want to spend... Look, I'm with Tim. I think the unanimous MVP season was better. Maybe you could put it against the first MVP season, have that conversation, bit of apples to oranges. I don't know. That doesn't even matter too much, as fun as it is to discuss and compare. It's funny. I just led a discussion and said the discussion doesn't matter.
Very typical of your
Who was a silly person who brought this up?
Yeah. Love talking about stuff that doesn't matter.
Round and round and round and round. Yeah.
What ultimately matters is not sports, actually. Sports, I mean, throwing a sphere through a ring. Come on, guys. I mean, this is stupid. No, it's really fun. He's making people feel great at a time when people perhaps haven't felt great in a while. The way Chris Mullin was putting it a little while ago, I thought was perfect, and he just keeps on doing it, and they're throwing so much at him. Maybe the thing we should mention is that since that unanimous MVP season, teams have developed all these new ways of counteracting him, and he doesn't have a lot of help, and he still finds out a way to get it done where the double team comes, he passes out the double team, and then he shakes free after passing out of the double team.
It was alarming to watch them play him like that, right? It was like they weren't bringing a double.
That's Doc Rivers.
It was just like, is Doc really going to do this right now? That was crazy to watch.
Yeah, I didn't think he was going to play, which is what makes it crazy. And I know there was a lot of people within the organization that didn't necessarily believe after that ankle twist in Boston he was going to be able to push through it. Now, Steve Kerr had like kind of an interesting pregame explanation about like the way his ankle braces work, and like it jabs into his leg and hurts him in the moment, but it actually saves the ankle over time. And that's what helped him get back on the court. But like, that's part of it too. You know, Ethan mentions he keeps doing it. This is through a tailbone injury that was clearly super bothersome for the first part of this, just like kind of nuclear stretch. And then now, to me, it speaks to just what he's done to his body and just conditioning wise and strength wise to ensure he gets through these seasons. And that's why when I talk about 2016, remember all the rewatches that we did during the 9-month break? One of them was that OKC game where you would probably consider, if you were saying the unanimous MVP season, pick the peak moment of that, that's it, right? The game we watched, he's a lot skinnier then. And we've mentioned this, but that's just it. I remember watching those games being like, geez.
He's a different player now. I mean, yeah, he's definitely a different player. One thing I'll point out, and it's, you know, if he had more help, he wouldn't have these numbers. It wouldn't be like this. Now, that the fact that he's putting up these numbers without that help and with the double teams, with all this attention, is a total credit to him. But if he had a healthy Klay Thompson with him, these numbers wouldn't be the same, I think, because they just wouldn't have to like make four pass. They make three passes to get to the fourth pass that gets to Steph, right? That's, this whole thing is built on where is he going to end up, and let's make sure we're set up to get the ball in that direction. And that's great. It's interesting. They're winning games now. Obviously, no Ben Simmons and Tobias Harris last night, but that's okay. You play who you play. But part of this is unique. This is a little bit of a unicorn season. I hate using that term, but because it exists the way it does in this world where they're not going to win a championship, where their roster is this tilted offensively, this unbalanced towards 30, and they have all this set up to get him the ball, this is perfect for him to put up these kind of numbers. It's Steph versus the world for the whole season. I kind of thought it was going to happen. Now it's really happening. You take Wiseman out of there, it really opens up the floor for him. But if they had a full roster, if they had a championship-winning, you know, at least contending roster, his numbers would be down like it was when Kevin Durant arrived. This just happens normally. This is what to appreciate, and it's also to understand, you know, this is one of those, and I don't want to say it demeaningly at all, but it's a little bit like the Westbrook.
Oh,
you know,
he did it. He did it.
Yeah.
I was thinking
hating me. But he got those numbers because he had to get those numbers. There was nobody else to get those numbers. And I will say Warriors fans demeaned it. They said, there's no way he's the MVP. Look, he's not winning games. This team's 29-29 right now. Now, you know, whatever, 4-2 or 4-1 in the last spot, whatever it's been.
Or 28-22 with him on the floor this season, which, you know, okay, that's pretty much equivalent to that Westbrook Thunder team. You know what I mean? Like, that Westbrook Thunder team was like 5-6 seed.
Again, I'm saying this to salute the Westbrook season and not to demean it or to in any way lessen what...
Yeah. Sacrilege! But
this,
sacrilege!
This is happening...
Warriors fans, this is happening. Never fear.
This is happening
I'm interjecting... I'm interjecting
there
needs
some,
to find
there
a
some
more
kind of
favorable comparison
to Fatigue now. He's got to meet some kind of Warriors board for that comparison. Shame.
Done.
Shame.
Done.
Warriors fans, I've got a cleanser. What about Kobe mid-2000s? Does that make you feel better as a comparison?
With Gasol and Lamar and all that?
No, I'm saying before Gasol, pre-Gasol,
okay.
Where the show was about Kobe.
Yeah, okay.
When I was
I'll
at Staples
yeah,
Center.
That's fine. And those were incredibly entertaining teams and games to watch. This is incredibly entertaining to watch. These are great. That's the greatest of the great. But if he had more, you know, what I don't buy is if he had more help, oh my God, it would be these kind of numbers and they'd win more. No, the numbers would go down a little bit. They just would, because somebody else would get five shots that otherwise would have ended up with Steph. Now, they're great shots.
in fairness to Warriors fans, who Kyle Kami is just killing over here, I do think part of the reason Warriors fans are celebrating this is because of the narrative. It's not because they inherently valued a season like this. It was Steph can't do this. You know, Harden can do it. Westbrook can do it. And now it's like, that's what makes this a unique season, is because it's another thing that he couldn't do and is now doing, right? It's another, like, at every turn where people were trying to take something from Steph, this is the next thing. So I don't even think 3 years ago, I don't think they would have valued this as much, but because of the narrative of, but he can't do it without the superstars around him, and then for him to do it and do it in a fashion that Westbrook did, I think that's why people are celebrating it.
At age 33.
Yes, because Russell Westbrook right now is 32. James Harden right now is 31. When they were doing the seasons you're talking about, those like heavy burden seasons, they were like early prime. Mid prime now has become like 27, 28 in the league. Like Steph doing this at 33. Also, to me, more than anything, this signals like what's ahead and like how long. And I know we've talked about it this season, but like he has proven this season like he is capable of being 1A on a title contender for, we would guess, at least another 1 to 2 seasons, and that's probably feeling more conservative by the day. And that has heaped a whole bunch of pressure on everyone else in the organization to kind of like acquiesce to the situation that they probably didn't know if they were going to still have like a 1A type Steph Curry on a title contender, and they do. So everyone else's job ratchets up.
I want to get to that, but I do want to follow up on what Marcus was saying, because it's not just Warriors fans. It's also some of Steph's rhetorical enemies, some of the pundits, Kendrick Perkins apologizing to him. This has validated him in the eyes of people whose eyes might be called into question, because I don't know what they were watching if they thought that Steph Curry was only a product of having great teammates. He makes the most difficult shots there are to make. I don't understand what they were seeing before, but for whatever reason, his ability to do this and to rack up the points in a Kobe 06 style has a lot of people going, I'm sorry, I doubted, I'm sorry, I hated. You're already seeing that currently, and now it's turning into some MVP buzz. So yeah, to me, it's crazy that this would even help him being on a team that's middling after all he's accomplished in his career, but it seems to be doing that trick.
It's exactly when they need it. He's giving them everything that they could possibly want out of him, and people are noticing. And maybe, yeah, he did need a season like this for the Kendrick Perkins, whoever. I think all of us on this podcast who saw the buildup and who saw 14-15, who saw 15-16.
I covered Kendrick Perkins. I cannot believe he's become this like pundit who's like very much in the conversation, inserts himself, and like it's just funny. Like he was like the aged veteran center I covered like a decade ago.
He's found a role. He's, you know, like people find a role, he's got found a career. But it does open the window for the Warriors at least another couple seasons, I think. You know, maybe not this level, but man, just a little bit down from this, and he's still, as Slater said, a 1A player on a championship level team, just a little bit down from this. And it makes their decisions this offseason even more important. It makes the decision on Wiseman, the development of Wiseman, whatever's going to happen with Wiseman, all the more important. But I'll go to a theme that I've been saying for a while now. This is the best they could be this season. This is it. Like Kerr hinted at it when he talked about, are we going to be a development team? Are they going to be, you know, like taking Wiseman off the board, less of Oubre. You know, he was fine.
Oubre is a
less
bench
of him.
Energy guy
and
is fine.
Just, yeah, of
Looney.
Yeah, just opening the floor and make it, this isn't the death lineup, this is the Steph lineup. This is just
that bar.
Figure out where he's going to be and get it to him. And this is it. I mean, again, we'll see how high it can go, but, and they're saying it. I don't think there's a team that wants to play them. I don't think there's a team that wants to go, we got 30 coming up. That's just a great playoff draw. This is not
what's
that
interesting.
Team.
Like, I know we're talking about like how the Warriors need to capitalize on this. What are the other stars in the league thinking now? Like maybe last year before this season, they're like, I don't know. The Warriors, remember all the players that they were trying to get? Serge Ibaka, Marc Gasol, who didn't come. Now, yeah, are those players like, wait, oh, hold on,
pass.
Steph's still lit?
Giannis
hold on.
He doesn't need
hold
league pass.
Steph's still doing this? Wait, is the title window still open? Yeah. I'm just saying, I wonder what they're thinking.
Got a hug from Embiid after the game. Well, he always hugs Embiid after the game.
I have a random thought too about, you know, we make a big deal when guys get dunked on that, oh, he ended him. Oh, RIP. Oh, it was nice to see his career. What Steph does to some of these dudes, I think, fits that acclamation more so. Like what he did to George Hill. I mean, if I was doing the radio, Ethan, I would say you made him look like George over the hill in that fourth quarter.
You missed a moment. You should have just did it right there.
This guy's career, I actually think.
Nah, radio Ethan is over the hill. That's what's happening. You missed a moment.
He made George Hill look like he didn't belong in the NBA anymore. I mean, it seemed like if Hill was towards the end of his career and he was on that ledge, Steph with that little slight push off nudged him off of it. So not only do these stars maybe want to check up on Steph and wonder about joining him, but they also don't want to get embarrassed. I mean, it seems like the easiest way for that to happen. But piggybacking what Marcus says, there's a little bit of trollishness to the idea that, oh, but it's real. I mean, some of these stars, I think after the postseason, are going to be disappointed. They're going to want to go somewhere. And I mean, if Steph's still Steph, I do think that it helps get that conversation going, especially if you can sell people on the idea that Clay is going to come back like Clay.
Obviously, with all this happening, right, there's this sentiment of the Warriors should have been playing small. This is what they should have been doing. Slater, do you think that's a fair assessment, or this is happening because of all of the things happened before that, right? And if you try to do this for a whole season, it would be too much, especially watching how Draymond and Looney had the battle last night.
If you want to make the argument that LaMelo Ball should have been the pick and they should have like leaned into a small identity, and you were a LaMelo Ball supporter before the draft, before you knew what he was going to be, okay, that makes sense. But once you draft James Wiseman, and I very much can't criticize that decision since I was definitely a proponent of it, you need to play James Wiseman.
You should do it.
You know, he needs minutes. At this point, you know, 836 minutes is what he's ending his rookie season at, plus a meniscus rehab ahead of him. That doesn't feel like nearly enough. That's less than half of Anthony Edwards' minutes. So, no. I mean, once James Wiseman's on the roster, like, you can't just say, we're small. You know, Wiseman, you're going to, like, maybe we'll break in case of emergency if you know, Draymond's in foul trouble or something like that. So, I'm not saying they struck the correct win well-developed balance this season. We've had podcast after podcast discussing kind of the yo-yoing of the priorities and maybe some of the mistakes with how they played Wiseman, but they had to play Wiseman, and if you were playing Wiseman, you weren't playing small. Now, I think the Wiseman disappearance, you know, just for the season, has simplified the now. It's complicated the future for sure, but it's simplified the next 15 games into the play-in, they hope into the playoffs, where it's Looney. By the way, they're not just playing small. Kevon Looney played 31 minutes against Nikola Jokic, a career high, was good. And then last night, he played 34 minutes. Kevon Looney played 34
like, minutes.
That's bruising crazy minutes against Joel Embiid last night. And his body's holding up, and that is a good sign. Now, it's also a concern about, like, you know, can he continue to hold up? They have, like, a lot of high-pressure games coming in the next month. But they're not just playing small right now. They have that small option more.
I want my victory lap.
Go ahead.
I want my
go
victory ahead lap on Looney, the Kevon Looney renaissance. Looney. Kevon Looney is a good NBA player. Do I want him playing over 30 minutes?
Tim, you can't let him get away with this, by the way. I'm going to let you cook, Ethan, but you can't let him get his little two games and all of a sudden he's back. Come on.
It fits what they're doing. It fits what they're doing, and he's playing great, and he's rebounding the hell out of the ball, and all that works. Is he the center for a championship team? You know, he has been in spurts, but I don't know that he is.
I just wanted that shade, TK, that's it.
Yeah, exactly. Have me be the bad guy. Always be me the bad guy.
You're such a great villain.
I'm all in on Sam Esfandiari. Sam Esfandiari's nickname, Moses Malone. I'm all in on that. It's a monster on the boards.
He's healthy.
Great work
that's
on
it.
Embiid.
He's healthy.
He's healthy. He's a smart player.
We will be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
I've been trying to eat in more often lately, so I signed up for Home Chef. I've had a few packages come in, and being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over all the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, even for someone like me who isn't making it onto Top Chef anytime soon. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs. so you don't have to worry about what you're making ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering my listeners 18 free meals, plus free shipping on your first box and free dessert for life at homechef.com/plus. That's homechef.com/plus for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. Homechef.com/plus. Must be an active subscriber to receive the free dessert.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Even though I think this is the best they could be this season isn't the most important thing to them. Next season is the most important thing to them because that's when Clay's back. Theoretically, you know, we'll see at what level, and that's why they had to play Wiseman. That's why they had to pick Wiseman. I'll still go with that. We'll see how his career turns out with LaMelo Ball. But once you take him, once that's the way you're going, you had to play him. Probably should have played him a little bit more. Now you don't have him, and okay, this is what Kerr saw from the beginning. It's still not enough to win a championship. It's enough to scare somebody. It's enough to be really entertaining. If they have Wiseman at full go next season, I think that's what they would prefer. But it does depend on Wiseman. Depends on everything else. Depends on these draft picks. But you can say it's what's really good for them now, and I'm certainly saying that, but it's not the best thing probably for them long term. But that's okay. This is where they ended up.
Steve's frustration when people say, why not just play small all the time, or why not just play pick and roll all the time, I think is worth looking at. I think his analogy is, it's like saying, well, why doesn't Scherzer just throw the slider every time? It's a devastating slider. Like, why not slider every time? You do need different looks. Now, there can be a discussion of, does Steve go too much for this or does he go too much for that? But I do think that's something worth considering, that I don't think they can just play Draymond the five all the time. I just don't think that's going to work. And, you know, that's why Looney, I mean, and again, Looney and Draymond together, in theory, awful for your spacing. But in practice, with all the complicated defenses that they're throwing at Steph, they're doing these combo screens.
Oh, you're talking about how Looney or Draymond was screening for Looney, who then went the screen for Steph's man. Yeah, Embiid had no response for that. It was a nice little scheme.
The answer to it is just they have to be awesome defensively. And they were last night. You know, Philadelphia scored 15 third quarter points, 96 total. They were great on Embiid. Like, Draymond ended with five fouls. Looney ended with five fouls. And they were just like kind of selectively deciding when to double, when one of them can take a foul, and okay, you took two fouls, now it's his turn to get on him, and that felt like a playoff, like schematic type game last night, and they came through it well, and that's a credit to Looney, who we forget, like, you know, we talk about Draymond and Steph and that coaching staff being very playoff tested, like, come on, Looney's very playoff tested. He's played a lot of playoff games, even though he's only 25 years old. So will he hold up? I don't know. I mean, I think, but you look ahead and you look at where this season might be going. If they get in the play-in and let's say they win the play-in, they're probably going to play Phoenix or Utah in the first round. That's Rudy Gobert and DeAndre Ayton. Like, Kevon Looney's needed in that first round for sure.
I'll just say this was a playoff kind of defense, right? Just collapse on their best player and make someone else beat them. And Philly didn't have Ben Simmons, who's not a shooter, but he could have moved the defense, certainly. And Tobias Harris has been a great offensive player this season. So that made a difference. And Seth Curry started off hot and then just disappeared. And, you know, Shake Milton is not a guy I think you're going to count on. You better not be counting on. They exposed some things about the 76ers that we've thought about. We're not sure. Is Danny Green really the guy who's going to make a shot in the fourth quarter? We've wondered that about Danny Green his whole career. He hasn't made a lot of them. But the Warriors played smart. Like, hey, Embiid is, we're going to swarm Embiid. Doesn't matter what he's, if he dribbles a ball, there's going to be two people swiping at him. And let's see someone else do it. And the Sixers didn't have that. Boston did have that, by the way. That was the difference. Boston had guys making shots from everywhere. But the Warriors have this baseline. They've got this number 30 who's going to scare the hell out of you for 36 minutes a game, and then you better have an answer for it, and the Warriors are going to just swarm the best offensive players if they can on the opponent. It works. It's very interesting. It's also 29 and 29 right now. So, you know, it gets you to a certain point.
I was interested in that Draymond Udonis Haslam mid-range off the pick and roll. That was interesting to me because there have been games where he takes that, and I go, ugh, that's not what you want. But, I mean, that won the Miami Heat a championship
in
the finals. Was,
I'm not sure the Udonis Haslam mid-range
in a different era,
a loved part of a modern
offense. Unlocking a championship era.
Follow me on this. In a different era, but Steph's a different player, where he commands so many bodies that you could potentially, because they've been trying to do it from behind the three-point arc and with mixed results, but if it can be guaranteed that Draymond with that frozen rope shot that doesn't always get over the rim if he's behind the arc, if he's a 50-50 proposition wide open when it's 12 feet, 13 feet, and he's close to where he can make a shovel pass or a lob, I mean, I just look at that as that's potentially an interesting way to unlock the offense. And I don't know if it's going to be consistent, but seeing that a few times, that was intriguing to me.
Yeah, he's scoring more. He's scoring, and it's not going to pop off the game log, but I believe he's got at least 8 in like 6 of the last 11 games. And I put the stat in my post game. I think there's something like 12-3 when he scores double digits, something like that this season. They're a better team when he scores, and it's never pretty when he scores. Is it the Udonis Haslam frozen rope, you know, 14-footer? Is it one of those backpack threes, or, you know, his layups sometimes at the rim that can be an adventure? Against Boston, he missed what would have been the game-tying layup in the final minute. So it's an adventure, but where you're right is like a boost of Draymond offense, an 8-point boost for an entire game of Draymond offense is just, those are 8 very felt points. Like, you feel it when he scores, and it does make them a better team when he's just a little bit more of a threat.
Andrew Wiggins has been pretty damn good for a while here. And
yes.
Coaches tell us by the minutes they play, guys. And he played 42 last night. And he played 41 against Boston.
I barely remember him like he leaving the down court. I don't remember him not being
exactly.
on the court.
Yeah, so like he just stays out there in a way that Kerr hasn't done with almost anybody. Maybe Clay sometimes, maybe Draymond in big games. But he just leaves him out there, and he just runs. And that's what I mean, like to say about Clay. Like, he can just run all day, obviously pre-injuries. Does he ever look like he's sweaty? He does. He just doesn't look he is unbelievable. And even if he isn't demanding the ball, even if you probably want to see him be more aggressive offensively, he plays very solid defense no matter what, and he runs the court, and he gives you just quality two-way minutes. Sometimes the offense isn't great, sometimes it is, and 42 minutes and 41 minutes is a sign that they need him on the floor, and I think that's worth mentioning at a very important, I mean, and he's played every game. He's played like 800 more minutes, more than anybody else,
games,
whatever. It's
yes.
like 400 minutes, more minutes than anybody else on the team.
They crushed that trade. Can we say it? They
Marcus, about
trade.
Time you admit I mean, this, huh? That admit this, Marcus.
Hey, I gave my man Copa already.
They crushed it.
Still should have got another pick, but I'll let you live.
It's been an angsty season, and people have serious doubts about Wiseman and worries about how good LaMelo is, and so that might ultimately be a big choice that doesn't go their way. But maybe on the other side of it, there isn't enough consideration of how, I mean, you'd rather have Wiggins way more so than D'Angelo Russell even before you consider the pick that got attached to it. So yeah, they maybe should have squeezed more out of the Wolves considering how much they wanted Russell.
And how much they hated Wiggins.
But the Warriors won that trade by a lot. That is a decision that has gone their way right now when we look at it.
Andrew Wiggins' first 4 years of his career played 82 games, 81 games, 82 games, 82 games. He doesn't miss games. You know, you don't feel that from the outside looking in where you're casually following the Minnesota Timberwolves because you're not watching them on a daily basis. But you watch this Warriors season, we're watching every game, and the fact that he is that constant 34-minute-per-night presence on an every-night basis, like, you feel that. There's never, you know, I remember early in the season, it was like, well, he's questionable with like a, you know, a quad, or I think he like banged up a hip early in the season, and he was like on the injury report as like questionable. But that's the only time we've ever even like worried about Andrew Wiggins' availability. The shot has come and gone, but there just is something to always being there. He's just emotionally steady. And I know that, that's been criticism of him in his career. And remember early in the seasons where we're like, you know, if he had a little bit more oubre, he could player that everyone thought he would be. I think it's pretty good that he's just got a little Andrew Wiggins. For the role he needs to play, it's good.
When Clay comes back too, you got, you know, if you think that way and another player via the draft, just run the court, play defense, and when the ball comes your way, make a shot or two, you know? Like, make a three or make a couple threes a game, maybe one three a game, shoot 34% from three, be a threat, attack the rim, get a couple buckets with a second unit. There's value there. I mean, it's not $33 million a year maybe, but it's not $2 million.
I was going to say, we kind of got to bring that up. I mean, we're describing making $15 million, $20
million. Yes, but that was part of the understanding. I mean,
But the way that, like, acquisitions went down and, like, the string of transactions, that, like, $33 million means a lot on the marketplace, but to the Warriors, as long as Joe Lacob's willing to pay it, it doesn't. You know, like, even in locker room dynamics, I don't think it matters that much.
Russell money meant something, in the locker room, because they paid it to him, right? They paid it to D'Angelo Russell. They just took the Wiggins trade back. If that does make it, there's a little bit of difference there.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Wiggins' willingness to be such a role player, and like, he doesn't present himself like, I'm the max guy. I'm the alpha. From Steph Curry, you know? It's like, I'm here to play my, like, starting small forward role, like above average starting small forward.
He's career high from two. He's a career high from three, right? Like, he's playing the best defense of his life. He's not just out there, right? Like, he's literally taking advantage of playing next to Steph and being the most efficient.
What would he get on the market? What would he get if he was a free agent this summer?
I can't answer that because the NBA salary situation is so weird considering.
Let me put it this way. Oubre is a free agent, and like, I think he is desiring somewhere towards $20 million. I don't think he's going to get it. He's on $14 million. Like, the Suns gave Oubre $14 million per season like two off seasons ago. So I assume Kelly Oubre is probably going to get like $15, $16 million or so.
I think Wiggins
That's what I mean. We've seen over the course of this NBA season, like, who is just a better winning basketball player. And so it's at least 20.
With Wings, it doesn't take a lot to tip this into, everybody would pay that. I mean, it could go the other way. But if Wiggins plays a little bit better, then it's no question 30. And if he plays a little bit worse, then, nowhere near it. I mean, it's a very thin margin proposition because right now I think he's scoring with maybe average efficiency. I don't know how we really assess how open he is, whatever. But it's like average. But if he gets to above average and then the defense and the athleticism and the durability, then that seems to more than justify the contract. How do we feel, by the way, about the scuffles of Poole? You know, do we still like the way he's playing and the shots just not going in? Does this change the assessment? I like how he plays game to game, at least on the offensive side. Defense is another story, but I'm not selling the Poole stock.
He was ridiculously hot for a bunch and deserved the promotion up to the rotation. But yeah, he's come back a little. Shot sometimes looks a little bit like it did last season, a little bit, not exactly. But I think the willingness to take it, the willingness to try to use his big body in there in the lane, he's still part of this, the part of this team's future. And he's still going to get minutes, maybe not get a lot of minutes, but get that second unit minutes. And also, you know, as we've said a million times, it's easy to forget Wiseman, but he's a key to, I think, the team with Wiseman into the future. Like, that combination is something they got to keep their eye on as they figure out, you know, how they're going to plot Wiseman back into this. And it's Wiseman and Poole in some form is going to be a nice combination for this team. Unless you're giving up Wiseman, then it's a whole different thing. But I don't think they're going to do that.
I'm writing a huge Jordan Poole story for, I think it might be out tomorrow morning. I talked to Jordan Poole for like 20 minutes. I talked to Chris DeMarco, who's like worked a ton behind the scenes with Jordan Poole his first two seasons. Talked to Chris Weems, who obviously was the G League coach, and Steve Kerr. They are trying to form him into a winning rotation player. He's clearly a super skilled scorer, but their goal is to get it to a point where they don't feel like his playing time is reliant on if his shot is going. And I think that, you know, as we talk about, well, they've kind of scrapped development because Wiseman's out for the rest of the season, and it's all about just go win as much as you can with this veteran team. Jordan Poole is still the sprinkle of development that is going on right now. If you look at everyone in the rotation, they're age 25 through 33, except for Jordan Poole, who's 21. Nico Mannion is very far out of the rotation now. Gary Payton II is now closer than Nico Mannion to minutes. But Jordan Poole is remaining in at least about a 15 to 20 minute per roll or minute roll per night. To 25. He's making some defensive mistakes, but he's also, like, I have clips that I'm going to put in the article. Like, he's done some defensive stuff they've liked, and that's was probably the main crux of what they worked on this summer. And, you know, they're plus 35 over the last eight games with Steph Curry off the floor. They are not being killed in the non-Steph Curry minutes. They've actually been winning them a little bit lately. And just think about the Boston game. A lot of that is Poole just finding, you know, a couple makes here and there. At the start of the second quarter, at the start of the fourth quarter, he had a floater, he had and one on Kemba Walker. Like, those are important shots and non-Curry minutes.
Even when it's not going in, he keeps the offense moving. I mean, that's what I'm seeing, and that's why I'm saying that I don't hate how he's playing, even if the shot is rattling out. And altogether, I'm optimistic about his ability to contribute. But I think he was plus pretty decently in the last game. I don't have the box score up, but even though he couldn't hit a shot against the Sixers, there's something to just being able to move the ball, being able to get penetration, probe. I mean, those are skills that you just don't see from the other players outside of Steph. So I still think it's an important component to the team, even if he's scuffling.
First off, they can run plays for him, right? Like, even against, I think it was more, I forgot what game it was. They kept running the same play, coming off the stagger screen and him sprinting. But he can get the ball at the top and get to the rim with one dribble and get to the rim. That's such an undervalued skill on this team. Even Wiggins has to, like, see that lane. Jordan Poole just explodes. It's just like once he decides, it's one move, boom, and he's gone. So I think it's just a matter. It's a matter of time and experience and of him putting his game together. Some of his open threes, he still rushes. When his feet are set and he takes his time, like, he becomes a pretty reliable knockdown shooter. But I don't know if he always knows that. He takes some threes where his feet aren't set. He's rushing a bit and he's going for the stylistic three when he doesn't need to. I think all that stuff can be worked out. And right now he's just getting reps.
And as long as he's attempting to do the winning stuff they want on defense, being more physical because he tends to, you know, kind of be a little soft at times, honestly, defensively. As long as he's doing that, the streaky stuff's not bad for a bench guy. You know what I mean? Because, like, yeah, sometimes it can hurt you for a four-game stretch if he's missing some of those open threes. But he's already shown. He went through an eight-game stretch where he was like 50-40-90, basically scoring like 20 a game. Like, what if he has a hot streak at a really good time?
And also, somebody's got to take those shots on that second unit. Somebody's got to take those shots. And he's become kind of the focal point at times of that. And they need it. I mean, you know, you just somebody who creates something, makes a defense move. He's 6'5". He can, you know, he's got that runner a little bit now, which is really nice. It's a veteran shot. And if they can figure out some things for him defensively, again, he's 6'5". It's not like you're trying to force a 6'2" guy out there to try to do stuff. 6'5" can switch some things, can be big, maybe can rebound a little bit. There's value to this. And right now, you see what Kerr's doing. He's like, he's giving him the start of the second, start of the fourth. And if he earns more, you know, then you have that kind of other guards or Bazemore, Mulder, Damian Lee, who, you know, Lee played almost the entire fourth quarter last night. You just kind of feel the mix of it. And like, one of those guys is going to play, maybe two of those guys is going to play, depending on Oubre. you know, you can get it. And he's in that mix at 21. And then, you know, you figure at 22, he's going to be out of that mix and he's going to have his own, you know, 24-minute role. That all works with this team right now. It just fits how they're trying to organize this. And they need one guy when Steph's off the court, and it's not Wiggins, because we've seen when they've tried to make it Wiggins, who just says, okay, ball's in my hands, clock's running down, I'm putting this up. I'm going to figure out a way. Sometimes it's not going to go in. A lot of times it's not going to go in, but the fact that Jordan Poole can approximate that definitely gives him some value.
They really like that he earned this role too. You know, like, he should be playing. He proved he should be playing. Some people could argue that, you know, maybe they should have given him more leeway, more of an offensive leash and try out developmental minutes earlier on. Maybe you're correct, but he has earned what he's getting right now. None of us four are like, yeah, I mean, it's good that they're getting the 21-year-old minutes, but, like, he's hurting them. No, he should be in the rotation.
Should have kept Wanamaker out there. Yeah. Should have still be Wanamaker leading that second year.
Wanamaker and Mannion together.
And as we're seeing, this is a veteran team that, like, now has coalesced into this idea that they are kind of in win-now mode. It sounds weird because we know what the season is for the Warriors, but, like Kent Bazemore wants to see where this is going this season. Like, all the veterans and the coaching staff now wants to see where this is going this season, and the fact that a 21-year-old has remained as the only developmental part of that mix shows that he's kind of forming an ability to be somewhat of a fringe winning player, even at his young age.
No question. Slater, what they got coming up next?
Let's just talk about what's in front of them from not only a schedule situation, but a standing situation, because it's getting interesting. There's only 15 games left. They currently are sitting in the 9 seed, right behind Memphis. They do play Memphis the final game in the regular season, which could be a big one, because it also has tiebreaker implications. Whoever wins that will get the 2-1 tiebreaker. So, you know, Portland is free-falling. And did anyone meet Jason Quick?
Hot seat? Man, wow.
That was tough.
Did that feel like out of nowhere a little bit? Like, it felt like he was the safest dude in the world?
Terry's been there for a long time, and they haven't.
It's only a matter of time,
but
right?
They knew we needed to hit our quotient of mentioning Warren Legere. So they needed to throw out some Terry Stotts in doubts for Portland.
Can we get a Warren Legere reaction to that story?
Listen, Terry, listen, baby, listen, stud. They're doing you all wrong. It's okay. Fuck them. Fuck them. We're going to find a new team. Wow. Forget them. So yeah, he talks basically like Ari Gold. I mean, that is how Warren approaches it. But that's a hypothetical conversation. I do not know what Warren is saying behind the scenes.
So the Warriors are 4 games behind the Blazers, do not have the tiebreaker. So it seems pretty unrealistic they're going to get up to 6th. Although the Blazers have a super hard schedule the rest of the way. The Warriors have a much easier schedule. Dallas is at 7, Memphis is at 8, Spurs are at 10 behind the Warriors. Those are the teams to kind of concern yourselves with if you're a Warriors follower. The Pelicans are free falling a little bit, but the Warriors do play the Pelicans 3 times, and I think like the final like 9 games or something like that. So, you know, maybe New Orleans climbs back in. What is ahead directly, though, is a Wizards game to close the trip on Wednesday night, where the scoring title could be a focus, because Steph Curry is now overtaking Bradley Beal. Steph is averaging 31.4, Bradley Beal 31.1. And then you come off the road trip. If they can steal that one, you're 4-1 on that road trip, which is that's a success. Homestand is probably their toughest little mini stretch remaining, which is Denver without Murray, Sacramento, not that difficult of a game, and then Dallas to close it. And that's Dallas for the tiebreaker, too, because they're 1-1 with Dallas this season. So to me, that's the biggest game coming up over the next week or so, is Dallas next Tuesday night, I believe, on TNT. Luka, Steph, tiebreaker on the line, and Dallas is sitting in the 7th seed right now.
And fans in the building.
I was about to say, do we have any, you have anybody got a, what do you think it's going to be like? Is Chase going to be a, popping with however many fans are in there? It's Friday, right?
I believe it's about 6,500. Friday night, 6,500 are allowed in, because it's 35% of what's about 18,000 or something like that. From the people I've talked to, they're like, I think if that many people really show up, it's going to feel pretty like semi-full.
Yeah, well, coming from zero, you know, it's going to be something. And people are saying, like, you could even feel it just when there's a couple thousand in these other arenas, like there's the Boston game. Couldn't you feel that? Like, there was a crowd there. You really sense that there was a crowd there. I think Slater said that to me. I hate to be quoting you back from a podcast we did after that game, but you could definitely feel there's a difference, that the players are reacting to it. Things are intense. a little more intense. So when you drop 6,500 there from zero, or you know, would have been a couple hundred of family and staffers, pretty
me
much
me in whatever suit yeah. I wanted.
But yeah, and that's gone. That's out.
Yeah, what was that about? What was that about?
I think there's going to be a notable difference.
We got to go back to the media section.
We're back in the media section. Back in the media section. So it goes. So you know what? People don't want to hear about our views, our angles of the game. But we had a much better view of the game when there were no fans in there. So it goes. Slater might be figuring out something else. Who knows?
The crowd presence made that Boston game one of the best games of the season, in my opinion. I mean, it really added something to it. We didn't talk about the Boston game because the Sixers game just happened, but you know, yeah, the Warriors lost, but that was incredible atmosphere. And I think if I had to predict, I think off the bat at first, you're going to see that 6,500 people are going to be showing up. I don't know if the demand is going to hold up. I'm interested in that, how much people want to be, you know, because with baseball, it doesn't seem to have held up.
This is a playoff chase, though, and this is Steph Curry at his hottest.
It is definitely different. And this is not like just the start of a season. This is like fans have been watching this now for a while. Like, hey, you know, it would be really fun to see some of this as it dwindles away because there's not very many. It is a little bit of a scarcity with the Giants. It's like, hey, there's like 80 more of these, right? I mean, you know, like I can get them whenever I want to get them, and there's no Steph Curry. So we'll see. You know, I have friends, so I've asked them, and they've said they're not going to go for a while. It's all whether how you feel about it, how safe you feel, and I've heard that it's the safest place in the world, but you know, you don't know. It's a little different.
Did you know that Joe Lacob is an epidemiologist?
I believe I might have heard that. And, you know, we'll see. Best ventilation in the world, whatever, all these things. But it's personal choice. I do think that there's
I don't
be
know,
a
man. This is the Brandon Schneider era. I got to feel it out first. I don't know what it's going to be like. Brandon Schneider,
really
I hope you got it together, man.
If it is a mess up, it's all Brandon's fault. We know that.
It does feel like Steph's creating a little moment right now. Like Steph is given a moment, something that almost reminds of a glorious past that people want to channel, that I think the league desperately needs beyond just the Warriors. So yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if there are people in the building for a while and there's good energy for the playoff run. That could be a very nice change of pace. So I look forward to seeing it play out.
The league did him a favor.
It's history. Go ahead.
I would just say the league did him a favor with the scheduling. I believe like 9 out of the last 14 or something like that's at home, and the last 6 are at home, and it's a schedule that really kind of that final push in early May as you know the weather's getting better in San Francisco, it sets up well where it's 2 Thunder games to start that last homestand, which you would think would be, you know, shovel 2 wins in the barrel if you saw the Thunder's rotation in that game the other day, and then it's Utah Phoenix in the middle of that homestand, which those are the two most likely first round opponents if they are in the play-in and win the play-in, because Utah's 1, Phoenix is 2 right now. So you get to see a little bit of a potential playoff matchup. And then it closes with the Pelicans and Grizzlies. That could like have real playoff implications, particularly the Memphis game on the last day of the regular season. So I think if it's a legit playoff chase and if Steph is still healthy and hot at the time, again, I don't know how that brings crowds in during like the edge of what we hope is the end of this pandemic, but this is building up for a fun stretch run for them. I don't know how in person that means, but
TK, 30 how bad was Joe Lacob that the game was blacked out on ESPN and also not on NBC Sports? The last night's game.
Which one?
Like if you were in a bit, it was on NBC
no,
Sports
on,
Plus.
On,
the Giants game was on NBC Sports. Yeah.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. Probably not real happy. Actually, oh, yeah, when stuff like that happens, I think
yeah,
of Rick Welts.
You're right.
Like, he's been their guy who's like hit him on stuff like that. And I've totally understood it. That whole KMBR thing. Rick was the one who was the point man on them not being very happy about not having a pregame show because the Giants, whatever, or not having their games on because the Giants had a spring training pregame show, whatever it was. So that's who I always think about when stuff like that happens. It's a channel flip, whatever. But yeah, I get your point on that one.
They don't have a good TV deal, I think, is some of the subtext and the subplot with that. That I believe they locked in that deal before the incredible historic dynasty run. So
they extended it when Joe bought the team. They extended the deal. So it's partly their own fault. But they can reopen. I got to figure that they can reopen it very soon. That number is going to go way up. That number is going to go way up.
Now reminded of your bet with him. Like, Joe, I don't know if I believe you that you thought you'd be winning a championship in five seasons based on the business decisions that were made surrounding it. Because otherwise, they would have taken. But you know what? The Warriors make a lot of money. I think they're going to be okay.
They make it. Unless Brandon Schneider screws it all up. And then you know, we'll have something to write about.
Guys, I know, right? All this pressure on Brandon.
Hey, all I know is the previous team president was in the Hall of Fame. He's a Hall of Famer. He got a Hall of Famer. Yeah.
I expect my food to be hot and my seat to be clean. You know, will there be food? By the way, probably not. Huh? Probably not.
I don't know.
I believe the fans can like order from their seats and then go pick it up at like specified locations. We'll see. We will report back on next week's Warriors Plus Minus podcast, or at least I will. I'm going to the game. You guys going to the game?
I'm going to the game. Ethan is not.
I got my vaccine shot, but I'll go to a game.
A game. And then we will report back on Plus Minus.
All right. Next week, we'll holla.
And Ethan Strauss will be doing a Warriors All 82.
Willie. Ethan Strauss. Breaking news. Rare appearance.
That bag must have been big.
Pick a game, Ethan. Pick a game. You got Wizards. You want to do a Wizards game tomorrow night?
He's trying to get him on the record now. Like it's on wax. Boom.
Look at that. Yes, I did. I got him on the record.
That's the classic is when you tell people, hey, you doing anything Tuesday? Oh, no. And then you introduce the thing they don't want to do. Not that I wouldn't want to do your podcast, Anthony. It's a delight. But that is how you hook people.
I came straight with it. I said, he's doing one.
On the record, too. Wow. All right. Until next week, we are out.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.